And welcome back. I hope, however, the time was spent allowed you to have some ease and a little bit more space. So, as I mentioned before, we'll just move into the sit and we'll sit together for about a half an hour. So, and invite each of you to drop the gaze, close the eyes, and just checking in. This body, feeling yourself in this body, noticing the points of contact, the sit bones meeting the cushion, the chair, whatever the body's resting upon, feeling also into how the feet are connecting to the earth. And we allow ourselves to rest in this body, this skeletal form, rest in these bones. Rest on this earth. Just to take a few moments in this initial part of the sit. Again, in the invitation of arriving, but to feel into the earth element of this body. It's helpful to pull in an image of a nearby mountain or tree, rocks. Classic mountain like Mount Fuji or Mount Shasta here in California. The mountains that seem to arise from the horizon as a way of mirroring, so it is externally, so it is within. This body, still like the mountain, unperturbed by the winds that blow. And for us, can we rest, feel into? Like a gravity into our, again, the skeletal form, the skull, just the jawbone, the vertebrae, rib cage, the pelvic bowl, the long bones of the arms and legs, the short, dexterous bones of the hands and feet, sitting like a mountain, the mind like the blue sky. Or the vast expanse of the ocean, both images, blue sky, expanse of the ocean, are meant to evoke a sense of spaciousness. Allowing some attention to rest in this body, a relative solidity and stillness, like in the mountain, the hillsides, the rocks. The trees, earth element. And then, as we've been doing these probably pretty much many weeks of working with the mind, inviting the attention to rest on how this blue sky mind, how the clouds of thoughts come and go, or the clouds like waves come and go. And for a more precise invitation of the anchor in working with the thoughts, can you play around with noticing, looking for, tracking the beginning of a thought, and then the expression of it, the middleness, and then the end? Sometimes we have thoughts that are just the same one. They just repeat. Okay, and just noticing there's the beginning of a thought, the expression of it, and the passing away. As is keeping with all things arise, pass away. All things arise, have their expression, and pass away. Can we cultivate a precision of awareness to start noticing? Oh, right, there's the beginning. There's the thought. There's the end. And just see if it feels like too much, let it go. But again, seeing what it's like to bring a playful curiosity of, oh, let's watch the thinking mind and paying attention for these beginning of a thought, and endings, the end of a thought, and the middleness. Sometimes those thoughts of ours can be so compelling and seductive and shameless that we just get pulled into that particular thought cloud or thought stream or that wave. Okay. At some point we'll realize, oh, wait, caught in a thought, coming back into the body, feeling into the bones, the sit bones, how are your hands maybe holding each other just as a place to reset. And then again, open that inquiry into, okay, how are those thoughts arising, expressing, passing away? So enjoy. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats. We see how it is. Thanks. I hope that was a, let's say good zip, but I hope it was interesting, right? I was following my instructions and it was kind of fun to kind of, and that question, like, where do our thoughts come from? Not to get too existential on that question, but if anyone did follow those instructions, it's an interesting exercise. And hopefully it was kind of fun. So as I said before, I want to share today just how do we relate to this notion of impermanence? You know, that I've said it a number of times today, the sense of like all things are, all that is born will die. Everything is the nature of the nature to change. As the Dalai Lama puts it, occasionally the suttas speak out about knowing feelings, discriminations, and thoughts as they arise, as they are present, as they are, as they disappear, outlining three characteristics of the conditioned, arising, changing while abiding, passing away. And this is from the Abhidhamma. How do we cut through our perceptions, sort of the clouded way in which we see things, to actually be with our direct experience? There's a great talk by Matthew Hepburn, fabulous young teacher. I think he's out of Boston. And he has a line which is around here somewhere. I'm gonna try one more place. I don't have it, but here we go. Sorry. The perils of too many pieces of paper, and I apologize for the rustling noise. This great line, mindfulness, this practice cultivating of awareness, is learning to speak the native language of our direct experience. Say it again. Mindfulness is learning to speak the native language of our direct experience, of being able to cut through the different ways, the filters that we put on about through our causes and conditions and the way that we can get concretized and the way we think about things. And this invitation of how do we sort of pierce that which clouds our actual way of experiencing the direct experience. This is Matthew again, who writes, he speaks, having concepts allows us to tell stories, right? We are storytelling as a species. The faculty of conceptualizing is so strong. We tell stories to ourselves all the time, telling stories about ourselves, telling stories about other people, telling stories about what happens, that we live in concepts. We can often get lost in these concepts so that we're more familiar in the terrain of concepts than we are in the direct experience. When life is not interpreted through the thinking mind, then we're able to actually be with what is actually happening. Our understanding about the world does not come from the thinking mind or the thoughts. It's from this capacity to have all parts involved, the body, the heart, the clarity of mind, to be like, what's actually going on? In the Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, at the end, the Dalai Lama talks about one of his practices, which is of analytics, the analytics of thinking. And in his practice of his 4 hours that he does from 3:30 in the morning until 7:30, something like that, one of the many practices there is really working with the thinking mind and noticing, being able to work with thoughts and that questioning of, is this thought, is it true? I mean, this is, it feels like, and forgive me if I spoke of this last week, but sort of from where Byron Katie, I'm assuming, got some of her work of being able to see the thoughts of like, is this true? How do I know it's true? What if it's not? What if, is there a way of releasing what can be a concretized belief in, no, I'm right. This is what I think. Therefore, it's true. And we can do that, right? From one of my favorite books, In Love with the World, by Yonge Mingo Rinpoche. He writes, my training has introduced me to the spacious awareness of my natural mind. We compare this awareness to open skies and oceans, references meant to evoke immeasurable vastness, even though awareness is more immeasurable than skies and oceans combined. So let's hang there for a minute. Our one's awareness, the capacity of awareness, is more spacious, more vast than the blue skies and the oceans. Once we learn to recognize the ever-present quality of awareness is to let go of the contingent and conditioned mind and recognize we are the spacious awareness. With recognition, We no longer get carried away by the stories that keep our minds spinning in repetitive cycles or jumping around like a crazy monkey. If we keep our minds entangled with these stories, then it's hard to recognize awareness. Yeah, the more familiar we are with awareness as an innate quality of the mind, the less effect the weather patterns have on us. Waves arise, clouds move. We are not stuck inside them, and therefore they lose their impact. As our sensitivity deepens, we learn to trust the knowingness of the aware mind. And I love this, this invitation of if we cultivate the capacity that is innate, so the way the mind works, stepping outside of conditions and habits and patterns and patterns and conditions and habits, we can, there is a place that, where the mind can be trustworthy, and there's a place of rest, a place of ease, you know, being able to reside with a mind that is a friendly place. Thought I had another one more. When I spoke before of the way we can get concretized, holding misconceptions in place with a rigid mind is the same as grasping. We grasp onto what we know or what fits with our limited experience, and this distorts the direct immediate perceptions. When we feel threatened by change, which is happening all the time, what change, whether we're feeling threatened by it or not, is not necessarily a constant. We try to hold things in place, which is another way of describing the aspect of the self that refuses to let old patterns die. But if we cannot consciously allow the patterns to die, then we cannot take advantage of the energizing benefits of recognition. So being able to find a place of acceptance, easing into the idea of finding ease with, oh yeah, all that arises will pass away, and letting ourselves tune into these little deaths that are happening all the time. They're in preparation perhaps for the larger death that awaits us all, but a way of using our daily experience of, oh, look, this is actually happening all the time. And how can we cultivate this muscle of resting in the nature of impermanence? All things arise that pass away. This body is of the nature to be sick. I cannot escape getting sick. This body is of the nature to die. I will not escape death. You know, being able to keep familiarizing ourselves with the reality of nothing stays the same. As a place of refuge and rest, when we try to hold on to, well, I want this relationship, this job, this way this body is, this way the health or relative health of this body or how this body looks, who? There's going to be suffering, right? Jobs change, relationships end, or they change. This body changes. And how to be able to put down the fight against the changes in many of us in the dominant culture, at least there's a real push to be like, oh yeah, you can control this. You can control not having those wrinkles, and you can control how your body looks, and you can control these things. Yeah, maybe for a little bit, but being able to understand, okay, wait, if I change the perspective to be able to rest in a place of, okay, it's okay. This is what's naturally going to happen. And taking away the energy, freeing up that energy for other things. So again, as I've mentioned a few times, sort of renouncing places where we're depositing our energy or investing our energy such that it can be better utilized in ways that's nurturing, uplifting, and leading us more into ease and a way of being more in sync with the world. Sort of letting ourselves abide with in our lives as opposed to fighting against it. With impermanence, there are a couple different ways to work with it. And the first of just, we kind of get it. We buy flowers, flowers die. We're not that sad because we understand that's what happens. Many of us. There's a sort of the intellectual like, yeah, I get it, which is helpful. And to kind of play with that, but then also how do we move into a more embodied sense of, oh, actually, this body is changing. At a certain age, it becomes abundantly clear. It's changing all the time. It doesn't look or act or respond the way it did before. So being able to ease into, oh, right, this isn't that something's wrong. It's just, this is what happens. And again, easing ourselves into accepting the reality of what is changing. And if we can practice on a daily level with, oh, check it out, it's actually changing all the time, which is why sometimes an invitation for sitting can be like, stay with a sensation. Because it's likely that sensation is not static, it's dynamic. And again, being able to find a sense of ease in relaxing into the dynamic nature of things. The second level of interacting with impermanence is to have it felt known in the body. And maybe it is about the direct sense of, ooh, this body is not like it was when it was 20, this body. Or when we have the reality of those that are close to us who get sick or that do die. And that way that it becomes much more like, oh, this is happening. And sometimes it can still surprise us that people actually do die. And I'm not kidding when I say that. I think I'd shared months ago, I had a family member that passed away and she'd been sick and I was still surprised. In this way of, oh, that's the way in which the denial can operate, to be like, yeah, yes, you're going to die, but I'm not. But being able to work with that reality, and as Thich Nhat Hanh offers as a prayer, like, I'm going to die and you're going to die. What we have is this moment. So let's pay attention to the moment, right? This is it. You know, there is no future. There is no past. It's just here in this changing flow of causes and conditions that come together such that this form can be with all of you and all of your forms in this strange apparatus of Zoom. From the 14th century Zen master Kozen, he wrote this right before he died. As the story goes, he woke up, gathered everyone together, wrote this down, and then died. He wrote, empty-handed, I entered the world. Barefoot, I leave it. My coming, my going, two simple happenings that got entangled. I love this. My coming, my going, two simple things that got entangled, right? My coming, your coming, my going, your going. We've all sort of gotten entangled together. And I think how he's using entangled isn't so much like, oh God, it's a big mess, but just, oh, causes and conditions come together. Yeah. As a way of sort of seeing through the delusion of, it's fixed, it's rigid, I'm fixed, I grace, with my personality and my sense of self are solid, not so much. But being able to hold it in this really fluid way of being, sort of enjoying, again, that's the fluidity of the wave, the comings and goings, the timing of things. And impermanence is, it's influenced by time, right? We are all products of that. And the less we can fight it, the more that energy subtle sometimes, or the way the grasping of like, I don't want it to change. There's a lot of that outpouring of energy that one doesn't really help us. It can just create worry and grasping and aversion and all of that. But being able to release that, oh, okay, what if I let go? Let go of the fight against how things are. And I know I've said this before, but this idea of like letting the truth be known and understood. I had everything laid out and it's not helping me out right now. Found it. Thank you for your patience. Kai Miller's poem, The Book of Genesis. Suppose there was a book full of only one, full only of the word let, from whose clipped sound all things begin, fur and firmament, feather, the first whale. And suppose we could scroll through its pages every day and find and pronounce a let, meant only for us. We would stumble through the streets with open books, eyes crossed from too much reading. We would speak in auto rhyme. The world would echo itself. And still we'd continue in rounds saying let and let and let, until even silent dreams had been allowed. In this way of letting it be true, letting this body understand the truth of all things arise, all things will pass away. This body is of the nature to die. I am going to die. Now, this body is of the nature to get sick. I will get sick. Letting, 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 letting others in our lives change. And this doesn't mean we surrender our discernment. It isn't an invitation to just be passive, like, okay, well, whatever, I'll just accept it. It's not apathy. It's just allowing there to be a clear seeing of the nature of things. As Ruth King said, you know, nothing is permanent, perfect, or personal. And when we can abide in those truths, like, okay, it's like this. Things are always constantly changing. And how cool when we give ourselves permission to kind of play with that in ways that are kind of mundane, like we were sitting kind of watching the thoughts or watching the sensations of the body, the stakes are kind of low. So sort of practicing where the stakes are low. So we have some muscle and some resource available such that when the harder things come, relationships and jobs and people die, those more poignant and challenging places of change, there's a little more like, oh yeah, but we know this. We know it not just intellectually, but we know it from the heart experience. The third way of relating with impermanence, if we think of it perhaps as sort of a developmental stage or as we mature into an understanding about it, is that the liberation, or yeah, that understanding and reckoning fully with impermanence is a liberatory practice, that there's freedom in it. Like, oh, of course, things arise and pass away. This is how it is. This is the natural order of things. And allowing there to be, again, that is a place of rest. Holding on to things and wishing things stayed the same, not such a helpful place to rest. We will always be disappointed by that. And even when it, again, whether it's our relationships or work or how we hold ourselves, the different capacities we have, oh, this is me. I'm always going to be like this. For positive and negative, not so much. But that place of resting in, it's going to change, that's a good place to rest. That's true. And allowing, as we kind of play with this edge of sinking into the shifting nature of our world, the waves, that line from Rinpoche of the thoughts coming like waves. In the book, I couldn't find the quote, but he also speaks about our lives are that from, we come out of somewhere, you know, the image of the ocean, this wave that is each of our lives, and we'll pass back into the ocean. Now that perspective can be liberatory and allow us to cut into this notion of, yeah, but I want it to be permanent and perfect and personal because it's all about me. But the freedom that can come in really releasing that sense that it is all about me. I want to share two poems. I'm going to share two poems. Let's go with these two. I'm going to read them together. Marie Howe is this beautiful poet. So I'll read these poems. The Gate. I had no idea that the gate I would step through to finally enter this world would be the space my brother's body made. He was a little taller than me, a young man, but grown himself by then, done at 28, having folded every sheet, rinsed every glass he would ever rinse under the cold and running water. This is what you've been waiting for, he used to say to me, and I'd say, what? And he'd say this, holding up my cheese and mustard sandwich, and I'd say, what? And he'd say this, sort of looking around. And I'm going to couple that by another poem by her called The Last Time. The last time we had dinner together in a restaurant with white tablecloths, he leaned forward and took my two hands in his hands and said, I'm going to die soon. I want you to know that. And I said, I think I do. And he said, what surprises me is that you don't. And I said, I do. And he said, what? And I said, know that you're going to die. And he said, no, I mean, know that you are. I'm going to read one more poem and move into an exercise. At the Door by David Wagner. All actors look for them. The defining moments when a character does is what he is. The script may say he goes to the door and exits, or she goes out the door, stage left. But you could see your fingers touching the doorknob, closing around it, turning it as if by themselves. The latch slides out of the strike plate. The door swings on its hinges, and you're about to take that step over the threshold into a different light. For the audience, you may simply be disappearing from the scene. Yet in those few seconds, you can reach for the knob as the last object on earth you wanted to touch. Or you can take it warmly like the hand your father offered once in forgiveness and afterward kept to himself. Or you can stand there briefly as bewildered as by the door of a walk-in time lock safe and stand there and stare at the whole concept of shutness, like a rat whose maze had been rebaffled overnight. Stand still and quiver, unable to turn around or go left or right. Or You can grasp it with a sigh, soundless discretion. Open it inch by inch, testing each fraction of torque on the spindles, on tiptoe, slip yourself through the upright slot and press the Lakshya silently back into its frame. Or you can use your shoulder, the hard heel of your shoe, and the leg thrust to break it open. Or you can approach the door as if accustomed to having all barriers open by themselves. You can wrench aside this unauthorized interruption of your progress and then leave it ajar for others to do with as you see fit. Or you can stand at ease and give the impression you can see through this door and any door and have no need to take your physical self to the other side. Or you can turn the knob as if at last nothing could please you more, your body language filled with the expectations of joy at where you're going, holding yourself momentarily in the posture of an awestruck pilgrim at the gate, though you know you'll only be stepping out against a scrim or a wobbly flat dubbed with a landscape, a scribble of leaves, a hint of flowers, the bare suggestion of a garden. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And to consider this invitation of what are all the doorways that we pass through in the course of a day, of a week, of a life. And there can be the literal doorways, the doorway from one room into another, the doorway from one house, apartment, room into another, passage from inside to outside. And maybe if it's helpful, just take a minute and just reflect upon all those doors and different houses, different apartments, different places you have lived, different rooms, allowing there to be like a slideshow of these different doors into different homes, into in some ways different lives that we've led. Who we were behind that door, who we were behind this door. Seeing what happens as you kind of play these images of the literal doorways into places you have called home. Imagining how we reach for the doorknob, yeah. And sometimes those homes might have been wonderful, and sometimes, not so much. Taking care of yourself, of where the attention rests, staying out perhaps of the darker waters. But just in thinking or playing with these images of different doorways that you've passed through, inside, outside. Noticing the feeling that's evoked, how the body may be responding. A lot of comings and goings, right? Comings and goings. And I'm going to ask that we let those doors sort of drop away. Letting go of the actual doorways. And to consider on a daily basis in our lives the different doorways we move through in the course of a day, and not the literal ones. Different moods, different mind states, different conversations, different physical experiences. What would it be like if we tracked a day, a week, couple of weeks and looked at the different ways, the different doorways we pass through? Again, not the literal doorways, but more figurative in the course of a day. The doorway of a particular mood, of a particular thought stream, of an engagement with someone we're living with. As those doorways are marking beginnings, And they're also marking endings. We walk through a door. We either walk back through that same door, we close it. We walk into something else. And again, I'm speaking more metaphorically here. And allowing ourselves to play and ask perhaps right now to take a few more minutes and just to play around with this notion of different doorways. Some of us, it's evening. But for those of us on the West Coast in the States, the morning of, think of all the doorways you've walked through in terms of your own experience. Again, who you've interacted with. If you're living with someone or if you're living on your own, the different doorways again of moods or phases of the morning, to pay attention to how there's beginnings, the expression of it, and endings. Training the mind, allowing a mind to abide and rest of, oh, these comings and goings are happening all the time. Can we mark the goings? Oh, this is an ending. There's a beginning and a middle and an end. And we practice noticing not just the beginning and the middle and end of thoughts, beginning and middle and end of feelings, sensations. This is our life. Can we align ourselves with this rhythm? That is one of the truest rhythms we have. I'm going to stop there. And thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.